Welcome to the Understanding Our Times broadcast, with bold and insightful discussion of current events in the light of a Christian worldview. We count it a privilege to bring you a variety of guests with thought-provoking analysis and commentary on a weekly basis. And now for today's show, here's your host, Kevin Thompson.
Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the Understanding Our Times Internet Radio Broadcast right here at www.understandingourtimes.com. I want to thank you for joining us for yet another week. Well, this week we have the long-awaited-for interview with New York Times best-selling author Dr. Jerry Corsi. Dr. Corsi, welcome to our program.
Kevin, great to be with you. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you hanging in there. We had some communication problems this week, and hopefully I think I cleared that up on Facebook. I accidentally gave Dr. Corsi the wrong information to call in. So I'm waiting for him, he's waiting for me, and finally we were able to connect. So Dr. Corsi, I thank you for your patience.
Oh, it's no problem. I'm glad to be with you, Kevin. I tried to get in, but with the wrong code, there wasn't much I could do.
Right. Well, again, I apologize for that. And
no problem.
But we're here now.
Right.
And what I have in front of me here, Dr. Corsi, is four books. Well, five books if you count the e-book I have here. The first book I have is Unfit for Command, which you wrote with John O'Neill. And I wanted to begin the program by first thanking you for this book. Thank you. I think this is a book that saved us from John Kerry. And being a former Massachusetts resident, let me just say on behalf of the country, thank you.
Well. And I also thank my co-author, John O'Neill, and the many Swift Boat vets who participated in the whole campaign. It was a huge effort, and I was very pleased that we succeeded.
With Terry Gilchrist, talking about those brave volunteers who decided to stand up and guard the border when our government could not or would not. And the book that kind of goes along with that, as you said here, The Late Great USA. Tell us what the connection is between those two books.
Well, The Minutemen was really to focus on Jim Gilchrist's efforts to get citizen volunteers down at the border. And the problem we were really describing in detail, the problem we were facing with illegal immigration. And then as I got into the subject, it became apparent to me that this was not happening by accident. And as I looked at the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America, which George Bush was pushing, I wrote The Late Great USA, because it was clear to me there was an agenda here. The agenda was to intentionally keep the border open, to allow 10 or 20% of Mexico's population to move into the United States and live in the United States as if the United States were Mexico, and move us towards a North American Union, the same way that the globalists had moved Europe towards a European Union, operating on the same basis, using a trade agreement, NAFTA, and then expanding on NAFTA to go forward with a, basically a political agreement, which was in the works. And I think the Late Great USA blocked that movement, at least slowed it down, made people aware of what was going on and slowed it down. So I thought that book, both of those books, again, a big fight. I was excoriated by many conservatives for writing both books. And, the left, of course, hated them as well. So, but I think in the final analysis, I made people aware that the loss of jobs we're going through, the open borders, all of this is an agenda which is, Republicans and Democrats alike participate in.
Now, you've written several other books that, unfortunately, I don't have. But the other book I have here is The Obama Nation. That kind of gets a little closer to our topic of conversation today. And I remember that was a big hit again on the best New York Times best-selling list. And again, you were vilified for even discussing some of the things in here.
Right.
But nothing that matches, I'm sure, what you might be going through with your latest book, Where's the Birth Certificate? So give us – here's the easy softball question to start things off with. Give us, for you know, for those living on planet Mars, give us the major premise behind where is the birth certificate, and just give us the major premise for now.
Well, the major premise is that Barack Obama is not eligible to be president, that he has gamed the system in any number of ways. He's not eligible both because he's a dual citizen at birth. His father was a Kenyan citizen when he was born. That made Barack Obama a citizen of the Commonwealth of Great Britain and a U.S. citizen. And, of course, the Founding Fathers never intended that to be the case. They especially didn't want someone who had citizenship ties to Great Britain to end up becoming president. Also, the dual citizenship issues apply when Obama was in Indonesia, and I point out that it's very likely he was adopted by his Indonesian stepfather, which again would have compromised Barack Obama's status as a natural-born citizen. And then, of course, the issue about whether he's born in Hawaii or Kenya, and Barack Obama has just released this birth certificate on April 27th, which I'm contending is fraudulent. He fought for 3 years not to release this. He had millions of dollars spent with lawyers. Barack Obama had fought in courts to say this document didn't even exist. The short-form birth certificate was all we needed. And then my book is coming out, and Obama was obviously so frightened by my book, not wanting the American people to read what was in it, that he released this birth certificate and, thought that he could preempt the book, saying, well, where's the birth certificate? It's right here on my website. But I think we've positioned this so that even though I've taken a marketing hit with Barack Obama doing that, the book still became a bestseller, New York Times bestseller. It debuted at number 6, and I think it'll be on the list for a couple of weeks. Now Obama is himself complicit in presenting this birth certificate, and the administration is going to rise or fall on the authenticity of this document. And I contend that this is not an authentic document, that Obama, in fact, has continued to lie, and that once we prove that the document is fraudulent and get enough people in the United States to understand that, I think the Obama presidency may be at risk of falling.
Now, let's talk about just that question, because that's a question probably everyone wants to ask you right now. The book was scheduled to come out, and then the president comes out with the long certificate, the long-form birth certificate. And for most people, and I would include myself in that, oh, okay, well, all right, the issue's settled. There it is. But even before he put that certificate out, on WorldNet Daily, where you're one of the senior staff writers and do a lot of great work there, you had already been warning people that something like this may be coming, that there's something fraudulent going on. And, of course, after the certificate's been out there, you've been doing a lot of work to disprove that. So what if I'm looking here at the birth certificate, and we'll put that on the website as well, what should we be looking for? What are the markings that would make you think this is not a legitimate document?
Well, I've just started writing a three-part series that based on the research of Doug Boyd. He's a scanner expert. He sells scanners all over the world, and he has shown a number of forensic problems with this. I'll just point out a couple that are pretty obvious. When you look at the document, if you magnify it, so like 300, 400, or 500%, you're going to see there's white space behind the letters, a halo effect around the letters. Well, that doesn't occur when you scan a document into grayscale or color. The scanned document does not have that halo effect. And so it's pretty clear that when the White House said that this was a computer image of a scanned document, that's just not the way this looks. This is a computer-manipulated document. It was done in Adobe software. You can see the different layers, and there's clear manipulation of the information. If you enlarge the number, the birth certificate number, the 10641 in the upper right-hand corner, and you can see that one is clearly distinct from the other numbers. It's a JPEG or a picture of a one that's dropped into that number. You can even see the pixels around the one, how clearly they look disturbed, much more so than the other numbers. And again, that's because whoever did this really did not know how to repair the pixels or to make it clear that when he's bringing forward the numbers after having dropped them on a template, that white halo effect would go away. And it's clear that the manipulation was there, showing that it's not just that this was a document enhanced for viewing, like the White House maintained, but the number, you know, data was changed. They're working for from probably an original birth certificate and the number series 1064-something, but they needed it to be 10641, so they altered the number to make it the number that they'd already taken for Barack Obama's short form certificate of live birth, which was released in 2008. So this is a manipulated document. You can see it just from that much evidence.
Is there any other explanation that would that someone could you say, no, really, this is legitimate, and here's why?
Well, I'm sure there's, you know, there's people out there, Obama supporters, who are saying, well, this you could do this on the computer and make it have this effect from an original document, but they've got so many contortions standing on your head, and you're all putting on optical character recognition when there's no need to have optical character recognition, doing things which just don't make sense to produce the effect. The best explanation, and take a look, I'll give you one that's even more common sense. Take a look at the registrar, state registrar stamp at the bottom of the document. There you can see, if you enlarge it, there's a misspelling in it. The is not the record, it's TXE or TKE. The H is misspelled. And if you look at the signature of Alvin Onaka, the A in the Alvin is a loop. It has a smiley face in it. That smiley face is written by putting an E in the loop of the Alvin. I think those are the initials of the forger. That's part of the name of the forger, putting his signature into this document. But, you know, what kind of a... Here you got the President of the United States releasing his long-form birth certificate, trying to maintain to the world it's authentic, and you've got a smiley face in the signature of the state registrar.
So why would the President put... If it's this obvious that this is a forgery, I mean, smiley face and the other characters, why would the President put this out there? Do you think he what would be the... I mean, wouldn't he think... He's a pretty smart guy to some degree. Wouldn't he think ahead about this?
Well, you know, the problem is when you're forging a document and you're President of the United States, you can't put out a request for proposal and say,
right,
forger, apply here. You know, show me your credentials and what are your prices. You're pretty much stuck with the people around you. And they may not be, they may know how to use the software. They may, in fact, have a ability to use Adobe software, but they probably have never forged a document before. And forging a document is very difficult. You know, it's really not the easiest thing in the world to do. And so, you know, when you forge a document, it's not professional. You leave a lot of telltale signs and you don't realize you did it. It's like anything where you're not a professional. If you don't have the skills to really forge a document, don't try to do it. And that would be the advice I'd give. But here you've got someone who is obviously amateur. They obviously tried to forge the document, and Barack Obama is now stuck with this.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions that I would have, because I would have, you know, we've done programs here about the birth certificate. We had your colleague, Joe Kovacs, come on. And,
right.
One of the most downloaded programs we did. And it seems to me, at the very least, it's just common sense to have a man prove a constitutional requirement for his job. If he doesn't produce a birth certificate, he shouldn't get the job. If he can't produce the evidence, then what? It just made common sense to me. Then as he puts it out, in my mind, I thought, all right, we're done. Good, we can all go home now, controversy over. But of course, now we're looking at the document itself. But I wanted to look at some of the other things I was thinking about. I just want to throw it your way and talk about it. What about the racism accusation? Now, as I've said on my blog, it almost seems a little naive not to think there's something, not to say that birthers or those doubting the legitimacy of this document are racist, but it seems to make sense to me that when you have, at least in modern history, the first asked about is asks about his birth certificate is the guy with the funny name with a different color. Do you think that race has anything to do with this whatsoever?
No, you know, the first chapter of the book, in fact, I put the first exhibits in the book to show you that the initial birthers were the Democrats and the mainstream media. They ran this huge attack against John McCain, asking for John McCain's birth certificate. John McCain was born in the Panama Canal Zone. So here you've got the New York Times, McCain's Canal Zone birth prompts queries about whether that rules him out. Wall Street Journal, does John McCain have a birthplace problem, February 28, 2008. MSNBC, McCain's citizenship called into question, February 29, 2008. It goes on. Washington Post, McCain's birth abroad stirs legal debate, May 2nd, 2008. So, you know, the first questions were asked about McCain. And nobody said that was racist or a birther or off track or not appropriate. McCain came to Congress. McCain presented his birth credentials. And the Senate passed a resolution and said McCain was a natural-born citizen. McCain had two U.S. citizen parents when he was born. It was a major requirement in being a natural-born citizen. Now, Obama co-sponsored that resolution, but Obama would not submit his birth credentials to the Senate because he knew his father was Kenyan, and that meant Barack Obama didn't have two U.S. citizen parents. He, in fact, was a dual citizen at birth, a citizen of Commonwealth of Great Britain. As I mentioned earlier, that should have disqualified Obama. You know, but Obama got a pass on that. So to raise the questions about Obama and his birth qualifications is to do identically what was done to John McCain. And if you read the book, my argument is it's going to happen again and again and again. I mean, we've got Marco Rubio, a Republican who is – his father was not naturalized until the 70s. And then you've got Bobby Jindal in Louisiana. And his parents were neither one of them U.S. citizens when he was born. So the book is not arguing a racist argument. The book is arguing that we need a mechanism put in place, some kind of a government structure or a government institution that would check the birth records for all candidates, all races and candidates, all sexes of presidential candidates. So whomever is running for president has got to present their birth credentials to this body, whether it be part of the Federal Election Commission before you set up a presidential commission to run for president, or whether it would be the states, state attorney generals. But Barack Obama gamed the system. The Congressional Research Service shows, I have the report in the book on page, it's on Exhibit 124, and what they show is that Obama knew he could get by it, that no government agency was going to ask him to show his birth credentials. And so he could slip through the system. Barack Obama hasn't released most of his records. We don't have his birth records, any except for this fraudulent birth certificate. We don't have the hospital records of his mother. We don't have any of his passport records, any of his school records. We don't know if he enrolled in these schools as a foreign student. Obama has hid behind a mask of we don't know who he really is, and he's lied about his past. So it's hardly racist when John McCain was the first one attacked on the issue.
I want to remind our listeners, we're talking about the book, Where's the Birth Certificate? The Case That Barack Obama is Not Eligible to Be President. That's written by Dr. Jerome Corsi, who is our guest and is with us on the program. Make sure you can buy this book anywhere where books are sold, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, wherever you go. Of course, it's going to be on our website on the front page. You can click that link and purchase the book there. And Dr. Corsi, despite some early internet rumors, World Debt Daily has not pulled the book for publication. That's correct?
That's correct. You know, that was a rumor started by Esquire magazine. In the first days of publication, they said we pulled the book from the shelves and we're destroying the book. I'm sure they want to give an excuse to bookstores to take the book off the shelves. But it's just not true. And then Esquire, a few hours later, says, oh, that was just satire. Well, it wasn't very funny. And, you know, the whole idea of Esquire doing that to damage a book shows, again, just how partisan this is, how desperately afraid Obama supporters were that people would read what I have in the book. I mean, what I write in the book shows the lies Obama has told. I just want to start at one key one. Obama has said that his mother and father stayed together as husband and wife, and they were family until he left, the father left, to go to Harvard to do his graduate studies in September 1962. Obama was born in August 1961. Well, it's not true. Within 3 weeks of the baby being born, Ann Dunham picked up and went to Seattle, where she enrolled in night classes at the University in Washington in Seattle. Now, as I show them, I've got her college transcripts at the University of Washington. I can show you the course catalog where she took night courses. I've got the place where she lived in Seattle, picture of the house where she had in her apartment. I mean, all these things, I think, are clear that Obama was lying about this fundamental story. And why it's important is because Obama's mother and father never lived together as husband and wife at all. They never had a common address. And we now even know from the Immigration Naturalization Service file that the INS figured this was a sham marriage. They didn't live together. There was never a marriage certificate found. And it was the kind of marriage foreigners whose visas are expiring arrange in order to stay in the country longer. You know, say I've got a U.S. citizen wife and a U.S. citizen child. So, but there's 6 months missing in Ann Dunham's timeline, and I've always thought what happened is that Ann Dunham went by herself to Africa trying to convince the family that she was the one. She had this idea in her mind. She was going to be the princess. She was going to be the Mrs. Perone of Africa, returning with Barack Obama after he got his education. They were going to save the country. But Barack Obama wasn't interested. He didn't want to have anything to do with it. So when Ann Dunham realized that in embarrassment after coming back from Africa, I think Ann Dunham decided that she was not going to stick around. While Barack Obama refused to live with her, she was just going to go to Seattle and wait till he left Hawaii. And now we've got the documents from Kenya that say the Kenyan government has come to the conclusion that Obama's birth records were criminally destroyed in an effort to hide his birth in Kenya. So, you know, that's pretty strong evidence that the Kenyan government believes those documents were once there and that Barack Obama has done everything possible and his supporters to erase evidence of his birth in Kenya.
Now, Dr. Corsi, after reading your book, and well, I mean, I haven't finished it completely yet, to be honest, but reading of it and skimming through other parts, you know, you have a former birther here who's almost ready to jump back on. There are some very convincing argumentation. I want to talk a little bit about that. But it should be known, one of the things I didn't for show prep this afternoon, just a quick Google search on book reviews about the book, looking for someone who can refute what you had to say. And I came up with nothing.
Right.
I came up with childish names. I came up with accusations about partisanship and bias, but I didn't find anyone who could sit down and refute line for line your argumentation or your documentation or anything out there. So, I mean, that's convincing itself, but I think even if the, let's just say for sake of argument, the birth certificate is valid, he was born in Hawaii, you also bring up the fact about what the Constitution requires, a natural-born citizen. But as you said, that's different from a native-born person. Tell us about that. You already hit on it a little bit, but develop that a little bit more, because for some, even like myself, who's a history teacher and a government teacher, I hadn't really thought about that. And so that's probably to my shame. So educate us a little bit about that delineation.
Well, first of all, a natural-born citizen, as it was originally understood by our founding fathers, I'm confident, is two U.S. citizen parents when you're born, and born on U.S. soil. That's the basic understanding. Now, that's natural-born. Not all citizens are natural-born. You can be a citizen and not yet natural-born. An example would be somebody who's naturalized. They are a citizen, but they're not a natural-born citizen. They became a citizen. Now, there's a lot of argument. People say, well, the 14th Amendment extended citizenship to those who were born in this country. Well, it may have extended citizenship, but the 14th Amendment does not address Article 2, Section 1. It doesn't redefine natural-born citizenship. Native-born. You can be born here in this country. But, for instance, an illegal alien having children, illegal alien parents having a child in the United States, that child is native-born, but they're not natural-born because their parents weren't U.S. citizens when they were born. That's the distinction. Native-born does not mean natural-born.
And that's not the first time this has come up. You mentioned President Arthur. This issue came up when he assumed the presidency.
Correct. And Chester Arthur lied. I mean, his issue, there was a lot of suspicion he was born overseas. He was not. He was born on U.S. soil. But his father was not naturalized when Chester Arthur was born. That was the problem. His father was not yet a U.S. citizen. And that should have disqualified Chester Arthur from being president. Because, like I said, Chester Arthur would have been native-born, but he wouldn't have been natural-born.
So what do we take away from your book? Obviously, it doesn't seem like there's a huge call to impeach the president, but as we approach another election season, what advice would you give to individuals and states? I know Arizona tried to pass a law, and that was killed by the governor. How should the people react to this? What could individuals in their states do with this information?
Well, I think first, Kevin, there may be an impeachment, or Barack Obama may have to resign if it's proven that the birth certificate he released on April 27th is fraudulent. Like I'm maintaining, it's very hard for me to see how he'll remain in office. That could happen, and I see the potential of that building. But secondly, what my book is arguing is that we need to set up a mechanism so this doesn't happen again. Now, what people can do is they can work within their states and get state laws passed where the Secretary of State of the state has to look at birth credentials before the name goes on the ballot. If one state passes this, I think it'll make a difference. It would be better to have a state mechanism where the states as a whole agreed for a mechanism at the state level, where they get together and look at the birth credentials of the candidates, or at the federal level, make the Federal Election Committee examine birth credentials before a candidate is allowed to form a presidential election commission. Now, also, this will require some real thorough discussion and thinking to make sure that we get a clear definition of what is going to be natural-born citizen and what documents and other proofs and examinations are required so that all future candidates can submit to this, not just Barack Obama because he's black. That's ridiculous. As I point out, John McCain was attacked on this basis by the Democrats, and they didn't consider themselves racist or any other birther or any other qualification to attack John McCain. We've got two more Republican candidates coming up, Marco Rubio, whose father was not naturalized until the 70s, Bobby Jindal, both of whose parents, Bobby Jindal was born on U.S. soil, but both of his parents were not U.S. citizens when he was born. So we're going to have to, and I'm positive the Democrats will attack both of those candidates on natural-born citizen status. So we've got the Constitution has a loophole. It sets the requirement that a candidate for president has to be a natural-born citizen, but yet the Constitution didn't appoint a government mechanism to be responsible, to have the authority to do the checking of birth credentials. We've got to create that mechanism.
And this seems just common sense. This just seems reasonable. Whether you are a birth or whether you accept the legitimacy of the president or not, this seems like something all Americans could agree on, that we have to make sure the Constitution is being upheld. Unfortunately, many people have no idea what the Constitution says to begin with. And at the very least, Dr. Corsi, you are to be congratulated, or you're to be praised for at least bringing up this whole concept of sticking with the Constitution. Dr. Corsi, you've also been in the news recently because of the attention you've been getting from Donald Trump. Tell us, how did that all unfold?
Well, Trump began calling me and was really wanting to know what we were going to do with the book and how what's really asking for information. And I was always suspicious of Trump because I was never sure whose side he was really on. And then when Trump, it almost looked like a setup. I mean, I accused Trump and I asked him in person. I said, over the phone, I said, look, Donald, when you dropped out, as soon as Obama released a birth certificate, it sure looked like you were setting up to drop out. And then everybody would say, oh, if it's good enough for Donald Trump, the birth certificate's good enough for me. Make the issue go away. And then Trump gets a $60 million payoff from NBC to renew The Apprentice. Well, again, that comes directly out of GE, and GE owns 48% of NBC along with Comcast. And next thing I said, Trump then said to me, well, maybe I'll run as an independent. I said, again, if you do that, you're going to be convincing people you're working with Obama because that'll just split the Republican vote. So I'm watching very carefully to see if Trump shows up in Chicago building casinos for Rahm Emanuel. I suspect he will show up doing that. And I pressed Trump. I said, look, Trump says he believes that the birth certificate was fake, that his computer, the guy who designs his golf courses, who's a computer whiz, came in and told him almost immediately that this document was totally created on a computer and was not a legitimate birth certificate, certainly not what the White House was representing. So I told Trump, if you believe that, get out and say that strongly. Do what I'm doing. Call for the original birth certificate in the vault of the Hawaii Department of Health to be examined forensically to determine if it's authentic and original, and demand the patient records be shown from Dr. Sinclair, the attending physician, and the patient records of Ann Dunham from the hospital, Kapiolani. So if you don't make those requests, it's going to be hard to believe, I told Trump, that you weren't just really shilling for Obama and being ready to step out of the way as soon as Obama released anything that you thought was, you didn't want to challenge. So I think that was, I've been very distrustful of Trump, and I'm continuing to remain concerned that the whole thing was a setup from the beginning.
Well, the book is Where's the Birth Certificate? The Case That Barack Obama is Not Eligible to Be President. Again, the author is our guest, Dr. Jerome Corsi. Dr. Corsi, again, I want to thank you for coming on the program, even after our communication problems. But Dr. Corsi, our last question for you, what final words do you want our listeners to walk away from? For folks like me who are probably undecided, if not a little skeptic, what final thoughts do you want us to be dwelling on?
Well, I think you've got to read the book and ask why Obama has lied so much about his, fabricated so much about his nativity story, why he's hidden so many documents. We don't have all of his, we don't have his passport records, his travel records, his school records, and why all of a sudden Obama released this long-form birth certificate when he fought, at least $2 million lawyers to prevent the release of this document. The document existed. Why didn't Obama release it 3 years ago? Why did he let Lieutenant Colonel Lakin go to prison for wanting to see just this very document that Barack Obama just a few weeks later released to try to prevent a book from being published? I think this is one of the major cover-ups going on in American history. I think as Americans catch on to it, Obama's going to have a very hard time staying in office.
Well, again, thank you for coming on the program. Again, go ahead and get the book, Where's the Birth Certificate? It's on our website. Go to Amazon.com. Again, most of your major booksellers will have it. While you get it, read it, you decide. I think you'll find, again, the documentation is pretty solid, and it's hard to walk away reading this book thinking, no, the guy's fine. This is a whole conspiracy theory. And just to throw it in here, one last final thought from me. One of the very interesting things about the book, Dr. Corsi, you show that for a lot of people who were searching for this document, including the governor of Hawaii, were convinced the thing didn't exist.
Right.
The power of the White House, the power of the governor's office, many private investigators could not find this document until all of a sudden the president says, had the whole time, here it is.
Right.
They're just, that doesn't seem to be right.
No, it's certainly, I got tipped off early on that the document, before February 24th, the document had been forged and it was now available in the Hawaii Department. I was even told, it would say Kapiolani Hospital would have a name of a doctor on it. So I don't think this document did exist until recently. That's my argument. It's a forged document, and I think we'll be able to prove that within a reasonable period of time.
All right, we'll end with that thought. Again, thank you for listening. Join us back next week. We'll be talking to our 2011 graduates. A couple of words of advice from yours truly from the commencement address I delivered last week. And so you want to tune in for that. That's next week. Until then, don't forget our book, Where's the Birth Certificate? You can get it on our website, www.understandingourtimes.com. Have a great rest of your week.